Right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can reach us, text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. So Sandy's back. And Sandy, before we went to break, we were talking about, you know, we were talking about, things, Medicare, health care.
Well, I think we were talking about people, community values,
yeah, this,
and whether the current problems we have in society related to, the plight of the median income household and the division, the fact is that people get upset about the handouts because they have to work so hard to get it. One of the things they're most upset about is health care, because Medicaid folks get Medicaid, and then the hardworking middle class $75,000 a year family can't afford to pay for health care insurance, doesn't qualify for Medicaid, and looks at all of that as a handout. If they lived in Germany, we'd all be in the same boat. We'd all be getting our health care.
So what we were talking about right before we had to, acquiesce for a moment, was the fact that lobbyists want to make sure that this healthcare industry remains profitable and that that business of it,
well, yeah, lobbying
doesn't go away.
Yeah, lobbying is there to protect the status quo. Right?
Yeah, but those of us who are American citizens, and we are saying, hey, wait a minute. We're doing the best that we can do. We live in a nation that spends money all over the world, Sandy, supposedly to make sure that other nations and other people are healthy. But then when it comes to the Americans, this is the part of it that I have a hard time dealing with.
Yeah,
Sandy.
Well, it's sort of, when you stand back far enough, you can see that the industries that have an interest in the status quo. In the healthcare industry, we've got the health people who deliver healthcare, but all they're interested in doing is getting paid for their healthcare. So they don't care if it's insurance or Medicare or Medicaid, they're going to get paid. I mean, they might agitate about some of the details about it, but yeah, they're going to get paid. So the industry that's really uptight about what happens to healthcare right now is the healthcare insurance industry, and healthcare insurance is a pretty big industry, and Medicare for All would be a government health insurance provider. It wouldn't change the way healthcare was delivered. It would simply change the way we got our insurance for healthcare. And so how does that get messaged to us? Well, the message gets formulated by the people who want to formulate a message. Well, the main messengers on that one are the healthcare insurance industry. So how do they talk about it? Well, they talk about handouts, and they throw arguments up on the wall that to see if they stick from a political standpoint. Political parties will line up with them because sometimes they can excite their political base by taking on the argument that has been mischaracterized, but gets people agitated. So what gets people agitated about Medicare for All? Or they think it's a handout. Well, the fact is, it's not a handout. Medicare is an insurance program. Medicare recipients pay insurance premiums. The size of those premiums are based on their level of income, but it's a program that could be altogether designed in a manner that everyone would understand that it was not simply a handout.
You know, Sandy, but it does go back to what you have said and what even I remember as a young man, that everybody had insurance, because I don't care where you worked, it was a part of the package. As Ron Johnson said on yesterday in the debate, Ron Johnson said businesses can't afford that. Small businesses can't afford health care. They can't afford anymore. These businesses are doing all they can to pay to actually meet payroll. Well, so what are we talking about?
The silliness of that is that, first of all, a small business, if it can't meet payroll, it's not making it, right? Are we going to subsidize businesses so they can stay in business when the market isn't willing to support them in business? But the reason that health care insurance became so expensive, well, twofold. One, health care itself has become expensive. But the main reason health care insurance became expensive is that everyone didn't have it. And as large employers in the 90s began to back off from providing health care insurance to everyone, the pool of insureds became much smaller. And when you have a smaller insurance pool, and as that pool tends to be older and potentially sicker, the cost of insurance goes way up. The whole reason that the Affordable Care Act was styled as it was in terms of a mandate was to make sure that everyone would be included in the insurance pool, healthy and unhealthy. That's the way insurance works. If only people who were going to have automobile accidents bought automobile insurance, it would be very expensive. But everyone has to buy automobile insurance. Lots of people don't have accidents. As the result, the cost of your automobile insurance is much less than the potential cost of an accident. If everyone is going to be sick buys health insurance, the cost of your health insurance is going to be the cost of getting very sick. So insurance doesn't work unless it has a big pool. And when Blue Cross Blue Shield, in the 90s, when the employers backed off from providing insurance to all the workers, the pool of insured went down. It got more expensive.
You know, Sandy, it's 350 million Americans. Certainly doesn't seem like, that number is so immense that we can't take care of that population, the wealthiest nation on earth. When you look at, again, China and other nations with much bigger groups of people, and they make sure that they're insured. It's hard to swallow that, Sandy.
Well, the whole deal with, Ron Johnson saying, well, small businesses can't afford to provide health insurance benefits. Well, if they were in Germany, they wouldn't have to. If they were in Spain, they wouldn't have to. If they were in England, they wouldn't have to. If they were in Japan, they wouldn't have to. If they're in Korea, they don't have to. So the way we have styled our health care, and with people like Ron Johnson unwilling to consider something like Medicare for All, which would remove the burden from employers, all employers, and it would shift it into a government insurance program that would provide, and yes, it would subsidize health care for those who can't afford it because their income is very low, but everyone would be in the insurance pool, and the cost of spreading that out over the entire insurance pool would be minimized.
Sandy, we began, and what brought us even to that conversation was these differences that seem to be insurmountable. As you stated, just listening to your explanation on universal health care, that seems to me to be a no-brainer, except for, again, the people who provide the care, and they don't outnumber the citizens. So you would think that there would be, I know Barack Obama attempted to try to make that happen, and we saw that that's never going to happen in this country.
Well, we didn't have our political process, and the educational process involved with understanding issues has been dumbed down so much that we can't even explain this to the public. We explain it to a public that maybe is sophisticated enough to understand it, and those people don't vote in numbers enough to hold sway, or we dumb it down and explain it in bombastic political ways that people bite onto and, without understanding the real facts, decide to swing their bat based on what they're hearing and what they're thinking. And it hasn't worked. And the political process needs leadership, and it needs leadership willing to talk about things. I'll have to say that when I watch political leaders, one of the people who is capable of doing that seems to be Pete Buttigieg, who seems to be able to sit in 5 minutes and explain something cogently enough so people actually understand enough of the intricacies. And that, you know, you can complicated matters can be explained; they can be simplified. Because whereas the workings of it might be complicated, the issues associated with it needn't be.
414-50. Oh, that's just the wrong number. What am I talking about? That's my phone number.
Oh, God. Well, what's your phone number, Earl? We can get you busy.
844-967-2789. At least I caught it before I got it all out.
Yeah.
Is the number. It's Friday. Fridays with Sandy Williams. And, you know, again, we began this whole conversation, and why I think it's important is, you know, Sandy said earlier, we've got to find these people who are willing to and bright enough to understand how you bring America back together. And, Sandy, it's your take that these people have to be engaged politically in some way, shape, or form, and that they need to be, we need to have them on both sides of in order to make this happen. Is that
right? We need enough leadership to evoke in us a shared value that I think is maybe embedded in us, but has not those flames have not been fanned. The flames within us that have been fanned more recently are not the ones that are the positive impulse in us, like community shared values. It's really the notion of the way our community does not share values, and the way we are not alike, and the way we can separate ourselves from one another. Those flames are being fanned, and what we need to do is take exactly the opposite.
And especially at a time like now, when we keep looking at China and Russia and our enemies, and we're looking at the rest of the world, and these parts of the world as our arch enemies, and we're preparing for Armageddon with all of that, you would think that if we're looking at the world through those kinds of lenses, we would then want to make sure that we as a nation, you know, kind of brought back together, right?
You know, when as you say that, I sort of had this epiphany. We talk about tribalism, and maybe our international affairs are another manifestation of what we have ongoing right now, which is tribalism, and the flames of tribalism have been fanned to the point where we're busily trying to find out who's different from us and why, and to go to war with them, whether it's domestically.
Right.
Or internationally. I mean, we're going to war with one another domestically over, you know, over sort of tribalistic views. You know, who's going to tear apart America? Who are the group in America that constitute real Americans? Who's in the tribe?
Yeah,
who's in the tribe? Who's out of the tribe?
So Sandy, that's at the heart of it. We've got to go to a break. We'll come to the phone lines, I promise you, after we come back from break. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to Bill from McCullamore. Good morning to you, Bill. You say what?
You know, you were talking about healthcare a minute ago. Healthcare might be the determining factor to get us back together for both sides. And Sandy touched on it perfectly. If we start educating people about healthcare, and we all know that if you remove the insurance companies or limit them, health care becomes affordable for everybody. I don't think we need to remove them. I think we have to look at antitrust. We have to look at all different ways. Nothing wrong with the insurance companies, but here's a fact. And before we had insurance companies, and you had, like, say, St. Mary's or St. Joe's or whatever, these hospitals, all their paperwork was done on one floor using half the floor. That was done. Now, there's buildings just for paperwork because of the insurance companies. And Medicare Advantage is so toxic now that I don't know if I understand this correctly. If you're in it, it's hard to get out of it. Well, that's ridiculous.
Bill, I don't understand it at all.
Well, the whole process is hard to understand. We've had health care insurance for a long time, Bill. I don't think you've been an adult or even older than age 10 when we didn't have health. We had Blue Cross Blue Shield, which was far simpler because right. It was basically a monopoly. I wouldn't say that healthcare insurance companies and the notion of healthcare insurance is the problem. The problem is that we don't have mandated coverage so that the health insurance pools are not big enough to make the premiums small enough. You know, Medicare is a form of healthcare insurance. It's government provided and it is subsidized, but it's healthcare insurance. So. You know, I think we all just need to understand what's going on in that industry, and it is complicated, and we've made it much more complicated in America than anybody else. Our healthcare system is truly Byzantine, and everyone in it will admit that. They will say, wow, we have created something. You know, we are, you know, it's tar baby. You get your feet in it, and you're stuck.
But Sandy, Democrat or Republican need the same thing. So there shouldn't be any divide between us.
Well, but then
when it comes to that.
Well, but then there's this lobby, and also the health industry is, you know.
Sandy, I guess what I'm saying is the lobbyists are there for, and it impacts both Democrats and Republicans. So that should be the one thing we should be able to come together on.
Well, that's my point. I think if we had a community value, which was everyone needs to have health care, now let's figure out the best way to accomplish that, then we would get there. But we don't really have that value agreed upon because everyone knows that our current system leaves people high and dry on health care, and there's at least a group of people who are willing to point at the group that don't have it and say, well, just work harder. You know, I did it. You can do it. But, you know, that's really not a community value. And that's to shed the notion of shared community interest.
Shouldn't health care be, if there is any community value, shouldn't that be it?
Well, you'd think so. You'd think it would be right there with water and heat and shelter.
You know, can I say something on that? If we look at health care, and we had Republicans right now on the air, I would ask them, who doesn't deserve health care? I'm just asking. This isn't a toxic question. Yeah, there's no hidden meaning. Who doesn't deserve it? Now, if they would say, well, these people that leech off the system, I'd say, okay, so you believe the poor don't deserve health care. Now, again, it's not a toxic question. I just want your opinion. But if I would debate with them, I'd say, you know, just listen for 1 minute, folks. If we give the poor and the people who can't afford it sufficient health care, it'll be cheaper for all of us.
Well, so here's why that makes sense, Bill and Sandy. You can respond. So these people without health care are going to become a burden at some point in time because they're not going to do preventative stuff. They're going to wind up in emergencies in the hospitals, and you're going to spend more money because hospitals don't turn people away when they're deathly sick or ill.
Well, of course. In fact, COVID was sort of an example of the public health interest in everyone having health care. We suspended. If you had COVID, you got in the hospital,
yes,
whether you had money or not,
yes,
whether you had health care or not.
And other people with other maladies couldn't get in.
And it was designed to protect the public. I mean, we don't want to have typhus, you know, the disease that comes from death around us, typhoid. You know, that stuff is the result of unsanitary conditions and broad death. Epidemics in very poor countries come with some very big problems. We have always taken care, ultimately, of people who can't afford it. That's why hospitals used to be called charity hospitals, because before there was Medicaid and before there was Medicare, hospitals provided medical care to the poor. and they didn't charge them for it any more than they could afford. That was why the Catholic Church opened hospitals. That's why there were Lutheran hospitals. That's why hospitals were connected to charitable and philanthropic organizations. We lost all that when we got Medicaid, because Medicaid was taking care of the poor, and now supposedly if you were poor, you had Medicaid. So now we just have this other group of people don't qualify for Medicaid, and can ill afford health care.
You know, I've been one of those people. Go ahead, Bill.
If I may, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you guys are a little more educated than I believe I am, but I believe the reason Mayo works so well, I know poor, very poor people that can go to Mayo, and they aren't saddled with just horrible bills. Mayo was always a Christian-based organization. It still is today. I believe why Mayo is so successful is because of the way they run that. Those doctors, their top doctors, will admit they could make four times as much in any other system. But they choose to do it for Mayo for one reason.
Hey, Bill, hold the thought. Hold the thought, Bill. We gotta go to the break. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. Texas is that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. You know, these things can be. They don't have to be insurmountable, Sandy, and I think that's what we're talking about. Well, they have to be made a priority.
Well, interestingly, you were talking off the air about how much harder it is for people now to get essentially the American dream. And I would assert that a lot of it has to do with the mountains we've created for ourselves by not creating the social architecture that really existed for us in the 1950s and 60s and exists everywhere else in the country.
That our parents' generations.
Yeah, I mean, health care, okay?
Yeah.
It wasn't provided by the government, but if you had a job, you had health care, okay? And it wasn't iffy. You had it.
Yes.
And everybody had it. No one even talked. This wasn't an issue that anyone even talked about in the 50s and 60s, except for retirement, and that became Medicare and Medicaid for the poor, people who weren't employed. And then, furthermore, education. You know, the education wasn't a mountain in the past.
Right.
You could send your kids to college, and it didn't cost an arm and a leg. You really just were paying for room and board and a little bit of tuition to send your kid to a public university, which is what people did. It's not like that anymore. So, you know, because we don't have public education all the way up, like every developed country does, because we don't have health care provided, because we don't have child daycare, so it's very hard for two people in a couple to both work and to provide child daycare, like it isn't. So that's created a shortage in the workplace right now in terms of workers post-pandemic. Now they're now identifying that many people didn't come back to work because they couldn't afford health care or staying home. And so we've created this mountain out of these public policies that we've decided to adopt, that Ron Johnson and others don't even recognize as being a problem, because they think these investments in the community are
handouts.
And everybody else doesn't view it that way. Everyone else in the world views healthcare as a given. Everyone else views education as a given that is an investment we're all making to make sure that our society thrives and that people live good, positive.
Before
lives.
We go to the phone line, Sandy, do you? And I'm not saying that people intentionally feel that way. Do you think it's that they just don't understand what it is we're talking about?
Well, I think it's because we as Americans have this underlying individualism, and people who want to fan that individualistic flame can do it, like Donald Trump and others. So we can start saying that your tribe, the tribe you belong to, is very small. This community that we want you to think about is much smaller than the grand community. We want you to think about little compartments of this community, like white Christians, We're not going to talk about that specifically, but we're going to talk about that implicitly. And we're going to get all of us down to dividing ourselves up into the smallest tribes. Now let's protect the interests of that small tribe.
Let's go to CJ. Good morning, CJ. How you doing?
Joel and Sandy for taking my call. But Sandy, you could not be more wrong. Your party caused this high cost, continues to. Obamacare is no longer because the mandate that your party wanted to cause on everybody. And yeah,
let's not just mouth a bunch of points. Let's talk about each point. The mandate, as I described it, and it's fundamental to the principle of insurance pools, the mandate was designed to make the insurance pool at the whole country. And if everyone in this country belongs to an insurance pool, that's not socialism. Is it socialism to require that you have automobile insurance? Is that a socialist? Are you troubled by the need to have automobile insurance to drive your car? Do you think you should?
No, I wish everybody did.
There you go.
There
socialism.
Are people out here that
is that's no more socialistic, CJ, than saying everyone should participate in healthcare insurance so that everyone is in the pool, so that the cost of healthcare insurance would be very low, because if everyone is paying a premium, whether they're sick or not, whether they're going to be sick or not, do you have fire insurance for your home?
Yeah, because I have a mortgage.
You have to have a mortgage. Your mortgages require it. Boy, that sounds like a mandate, doesn't it? Insurance mandate, CJ. Doesn't it make you irate?
This is the issue. I see where this is headed, and you want to pick away at each point.
No, I don't want to pick away at each point, CJ. I want to pick away. People talked about the mandate like it was some kind of awful socialistic requirement. You said those words yourself. And the fact is that a mandate for insurance, it just is the only way that a health insurance program works. If you want to have health insurance, you better have a big pool of people in your insurance pool, or you're going to be paying the cost. Do you want to be in?
It's kind of like Social Security, isn't it, Sandy?
Well,
we're not going to have enough workers. My point is that I wanted to get to the point of Social Security because Ron Johnson explained it and defunct the thing that he wants to end it. Not going to have enough workers to pay for people that are going to be coming up on Social Security the way your party is spending.
Well, now, wait a minute. Social Security... I don't disagree. I don't think anyone disagrees with the premise. And don't accuse me of having a party, okay, CJ? I'm tired of...
Well, Mandela Barnes is running against Ron Johnson.
Yeah.
Mandela Barnes doesn't want to hear the explanation.
Well, Ron Johnson doesn't have... CJ.
It's not something done to it.
CJ, Ron Johnson doesn't have a proposal to deal with Social Security. He simply says that it ought to come up every year for analysis to figure out how we fund it. Okay, but he should then talk about the premise of how he thinks it ought to be funded and at what level and who ought to get it. You know, there's no question that there's going to have to be revisions to the Social Security program because of the imbalance between older and younger people in the country. And the Social Security program is going to become more expensive because, like an insurance pool, we now have more people old or more people sick, I suppose, if you assume that age was treating it like a sickness in an insurance pool. But it needs to be solved in a manner, and the question of how much money we have to spend on it is pure and simply a matter of priorities. If we have enough money to spend $1 trillion on defense, and our defense budget, then we ought to reconsider maybe whether we really ought to be spending $1 trillion there, or whether we ought to be spending it on elderly people who are retired, or whether we ought to be spending it on young people who need health insurance. I mean, we should talk about these things exactly like you're saying, but someone like Ron Johnson ought to talk about those different priorities instead of simply saying we don't have enough money to spend it there, because that means that we do have enough money to spend at other places.
And what do you think it costs for the illegal aliens to have free school health care?
So,
and we don't even take care of our veterans
CJ, cut him.
CJ, people want to raise illegal aliens as an issue, but that brings up the issue that Bill, who called in, talked about, which is, how do you decide which human beings ought to have health care? When someone has a heart attack on the street, whether do we ask them for their passport before we give them health care? No. That isn't what has ever happened under any regime in this country or at any time.
But see, Sandy, this is the, you and I began this conversation with saying that there's got to be a way to try to bring these views under the same roof.
Yes, and it has to do with values, though. CJ, if we talk to him about youth, does CJ think that everyone essentially in America ought to be entitled to receive, every human being in America ought to be entitled to receive health care as a fundamental kind of premise?
He'll say no.
Well, I don't know if he'd
Let's
say
see,
no
he's
or
here.
Not. Okay.
CJ, what are your thoughts?
No, American citizens and our veterans should be taken care of before the illegal aliens
okay.
that are going to cost us already trillions.
Let's just talk about that issue then, as Bill has suggested it. Bill comes from a Christian background, and he says he thinks it's fundamental that human beings should be entitled to health care. If you were in England, CJ, you realize that your insurance might well not cover you. But do you know why you would be covered for a health problem if you were in England?
The reason is that
England provides health care to everyone. They have public health care. If you were in France, and you have a health problem. You will be covered because you're in France. And that's because almost every developed country in the world has decided that human beings, when they're in the four square corners of that country, need to be taken care of. Now,
If
you don't, number one, fundamentally, you can have typhus, you know?
Can I give you an example?
Sure.
My daughter was in Italy. She was the fifth case with COVID in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
They made it to Amsterdam. She was sent to the hospital. They shut down the airport, sent to the hospital with COVID. They said, you have to go. We have free health care here. We're not paying for you. She's like, where am I supposed to go? I got COVID. We're not paying for you. You've got to go. She was kicked out of the hospital.
Wow. So you were troubled by that treatment, and this is what you're recommending
you said
for
that
the people in America.
When you're in the four corners, you're taken care of. She wasn't. Free health care costs somebody something, and it's costing our veterans and our citizens. And you know what it costs us right now per day? To pay the contractors not to build the wall.
CJ, before you jump around, I want to go back to what do you think it cost when somebody in this country doesn't have insurance and goes to the hospital and has to have major heart surgery? They don't have insurance. And they don't have any insurance. And Sandy, they're not going to not get the surgery, right?
Well, no. I think the law in every state is requires the hospitals. If you're sick and you enter a hospital, the hospital will take care of you, and they can't release you until you're well.
So the point is, CJ, whether people have the insurance coverage or not, when the emergency arises, our nation, the way it's configured, will take care of that. Wouldn't it be better and easier and cheaper, Sandy?
Well, the fact is that that cost is borne then by the hospital.
Yes.
So, I mean, CJ, there's no free lunch here. And there's, you know, you're just talking about who is going to bear the cost and how it's going to be borne. It's not that you can avoid the cost of sick people. And the United States never has avoided the cost of sick people. As I was saying, maybe you were listening earlier, the reason why hospitals in this country, many of them have a religious connection, is because they were charity hospitals, and they were called charity hospitals because they provided health care to the sick and the poor.
Remember when President George W. Bush proposed taking 10% of your Social Security, and at a very young age, as soon as you started working, you would start your own health care savings account, 10%. Do you recall that and how it was demonized?
No, well, it was actually set up, CJ, and people did have health care accounts for a while, and apparently it didn't have traction because it wasn't continued, but it was demonized.
It was demonized, CJ, like those who wanted to privatize Social Security, is that what happens when the downturn comes and you risk losing all of that?
Well,
what kind of interest do you think Social Security pays? And you know what? Over my lifetime, what the stock market on mutual funds?
And listen,
done,
we got to go to a break. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, it's Friday. It means Friday to Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, the point we're trying to make in all of this is that this divide has to be healed. For heaven's sakes, I'm not saying that there is going to be a nuclear, you know, Holocaust. But clearly there's some signs saying that we've got some real tough decisions we need to make as a nation. That means we need to collectively, right? I mean, if you look at where we are.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we actually started looking at things from a community standpoint and we started recognizing that there were issues or problems that needed to be resolved, CJ clearly would agree that there's a problem in the healthcare industry. But then we jump immediately from the fact that there's a problem to an argument.
Yeah.
Instead of the search for a solution, we start a Who Shot John initiative on basically a
things
problem.
Things that don't matter.
But we jump from the healthcare issue to another area where we have a Who Shot John accusation. And what we really need in this country is the patients to identify a problem. We probably have five sectors in this country that really matter to the people of America, five spaces where we have problems that we need to start solving. And we need to say, okay, we've got these problems. What does the community need here? And I think we could move in the direction of getting our society in a place where the American dream was available again. But I would assert that the one of the things that's standing between the people of America and the American dream is the lack of the social infrastructure that's required to support it. The lack of child daycare, the lack of health care. These are the things that make it impossible for that median $75,000 a year family to achieve the American dream, and it's getting further away from them because of it. And so if we should put it in reach of the people, and one of the ways to do that is to set up these programs. Now, will it result in a different sort of tax structure? Yes. Could it result in more taxes? Yes. But some of those taxes would be offset by the loss of insurance premiums. You know, I don't know how old CJ is, but if he's young, too young to qualify for Medicare, he's spending $15,000 or $20,000 a year on health care insurance. And And that $20,000 a year won't be paid anymore by him. He might pay more taxes, but my bet is that he wouldn't pay any more than $20,000 in taxes than he's currently paying, unless his income is ginormous.
Yeah, so what bothers me about all that, Sandy, is when you realize that we have some 350 or 400 military bases all over the globe. And can you imagine how much money is being spent at those military installation bases all over the world? Well, do we really need to have them all over the world?
Well, that's the tip of the iceberg. And we've got military expenditures that the defense budget is a mystery. I have an anecdote. It's too long to tell about a brother-in-law who had a project funded that was in the area of plant genetic research that was funded within the Defense Department budget because it was such a murky area that you could basically get anything funded in there and the public would never know about it because it gets lost in the forest. And the defense budget is beyond the control of our Congress because they've decided to let it be that way. They've decided not to count the trees in the forest.
But see, but if you talk to guys like CJ, he doesn't even want to have that conversation. That doesn't interest him in the least.
My suggestion is that we've raised the defense of our tribe, the country, to the highest level. And the defense of the tribe is clearly an important issue, but we've let it bury the discussion in the triage of where are we going to spend, if we were cavemen figuring out how we were going to spend our hours in the day and what we were going to focus on, we'd focus on a bunch of necessities, gathering water, taking care of our sick grandmother, taking care of all these other needs, and it would be part of us at least a subconscious discussion of priorities. We don't allow that priorities discussion to occur at the national level because we've lost our sense of community with respect to all these other issues.
And because it doesn't happen at the national level, we're all impacted by it because that's where the changes have to occur. Right? I mean, we can't change those things structurally. You and I can have a conversation here, and we can have them in our communities, but it has to be on a broader scale. And it all things being equal, we should be able to influence those who we put in office, right? I mean, to make the changes necessary, maybe that is where it needs to start.
Well, it clearly needs to start with some process that starts fanning the flame of our communal interest and stops fanning the flame of our ever smaller tribal outlooks. And it's that tribal outlook that causes us to look at issues so differently, and it becomes we-they. It becomes a zero-sum pie. You're taking from me. You're going to take it from me. CJ's conversations frequently seem to suggest that we've got a zero-sum kind of a game here, that we've got a pie that we have to cut up. The fact is that if we have immigrants that come to this country that become productive parts of our economy, it grows. And in fact, one of the factors that has mitigated the growth of the GDP of America has been the reduction in the size of immigration in America.
So here's a prime example of everything you've been talking about. So yesterday we had a debate between Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and Senator Ron Johnson. Tonight there's a debate between Governor Tony Evers and
Tim Michaels.
And it'll be the same thing. One on this side, one on that side, right?
Yeah. We have a bunch of campaign ads in that campaign pointing out inflation as if the governor of Wisconsin
created
has
inflation.
Anything whatsoever to do with policies that could create inflation.
Yeah. So do you think it's that the American people just don't know how the economy works? I think that is not enough of the American people.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it just has to do with issues that you throw an issue up. If you can get attention of people and get them stoked up to vote for you because they're angry about that issue, you maybe just do that regardless of whether that issue is particularly connected to the campaign you're involved with. I would accuse the other side of doing it, too. Mandela Barnes is very focused on this, like, right to choice for women. And, yes, that's an important issue, but there's so many other issues. And I think the Wisconsin voters are interested in much more than that. But everyone knows that's a spark point that you can talk about that, and it'll affect some voters.
Okay, we got to get out of here. Sandy, I'll see you on Monday. Thank everybody who made the show go. I'll be back on Monday. Hey, thank you, Connor. See you later.